I couldn't think beyond what a sane human being might do.
I don't get it, said Vasquez. Where's his angle if those things killed you? What's that get him?
He had no intention of letting them kill us right away. Not until we got his toys back to Earth for him. He had it timed just right. Bishop will have the dropship down pretty soon. By then, the facehuggers would have done their job. And Newt and I would be flat out with nobody knowing the cause. The rest of you would have hauled us unconscious into the dropship. See, if we were impregnated, parasitized, whatever you want to call it, and then frozen in hypersleep before we woke up, the effects of hypersleep would slow down the embryonic alien's growth just like it does ours. It wouldn't mature during the flight home. Nobody would know what we were carrying, and as long as our vital signs stayed stable, no one would think anything was radically wrong. We'd unload at Gateway, and the first thing the authorities would do is ship us Earthside to a hospital. That's where Burke and his company cronies would step in. They'd claim responsibility, or bribe somebody, and check us into one of their own facilities where they could study us in private. Me and Newt. She looked over at the frail figure of the girl sitting nearby. Newt hugged her knees to her chest and watched the proceedings with somber eyes. She was all but lost in the adult jacket someone had scrounged for her, scrunched down inside the copious padding and high collar. Her still damp hair was plastered to her forehead and cheeks. Hicks stopped pacing to stare at Ripley.
Wait a minute. We'd know about it. Maybe we wouldn't be sure. But we'd sure have it checked out the instant we arrived at the station. No way would we let anybody ship you Earthside without a complete medical scan.
Ripley considered this, then nodded. The only way it would work is if he sabotaged the sleep capsules for the trip back. With Dietrich gone, each of us would have to put ourselves into hypersleep. He could set his timer to wake him a few days down the road, climb out of his capsule, shut down everybody else's biosupport systems, and jettison the bodies. Then he could make up any story he liked. With most of your squad already killed by the aliens, and the details of the fight over on sea level recorded by your suit scanners and stored in the Sulaco's records, it would be an easy matter to attribute your deaths to the aliens as well.
He's dead!
Hudson switched his attention from Ripley back to the company rep.
You hear that? You're dog meat, pal!
This is a totally paranoid delusion.
Burke saw no harm in finally speaking out, convinced that he couldn't hurt himself any more than he already had.
You saw how strong those things are. I had nothing to do with their escaping.
Bull crap. Nothing's strong enough to force its way out of a stasis tube, Hicks said evenly.
I suppose after they climbed out, they locked the operating room from the outside, shut down the emergency power to the overhead lights, hid my rifle, and killed the video scan, too.
Ripley looked tired.
You know, Burke, I don't know which species is worse. You don't see them killing each other for a percentage.
Let's waste them.
Hicks's expression was unreadable as he gazed down at the company rep.
No offense.
Ripley shook her head. Inside, the initial rage was giving way to a sickened emptiness.
Just find some place to lock him up until it's time to leave.
Why?
Hudson was shaking with suppressed anger, his finger taut on the trigger of his rifle. Ripley glanced at the comtech.
Because I'd like to take him back. I want people to know what he's done. They need to know what happened to the colony here and why. I want...
The lights went out. Hicks turned immediately to the tactical console. The screen still glowed on battery power, but no images flashed across it because the power to the colony's computer had been cut. A quick check of operations revealed that everything was out. Power doors, video screens, sensor cameras, the works.
They cut the power.
Ripley stood motionless in the near blackness.
What do you mean, they cut the power?
Hudson turned a slow circle and started backing towards a wall.
How could they cut the power, man? They're dumb animals.
Who knows what they really are? We don't know enough about them to say that for sure yet. She picked up the pulse rifle that Burke had taken and thumbed off the safety. Maybe they act like that individually, but they could also have some kind of collective intelligence. Like ants or termites. Bishop talked about that before he left. Termites build mounds 3 meters high. Leafcutter ants have agriculture. Is that just instinct? What is intelligence anyway? She glanced left. Stay close, Newt. The rest of you, let's get some trackers going. Come on, get moving. Gorman, keep an eye on Burke. Hudson and Vasquez switched on their scanners. The glow of the motion tracker sensors was comforting in the darkness. Modern technology hadn't failed them completely yet. With the two troopers leading the way, they headed for the corridor. With all power out to operations, Vasquez had to slide the barrier aside manually. Ripley's voice sounded behind the smart gun operator.
Anything?
Nothing here.
Vasquez was a shadow against one wall. She didn't have to put the same question to Hudson, because everyone heard the Comtex tracker beep loudly. All eyes turned in his direction.
There's something. I got something.
He panned the tracker around. It beeped again, louder this time.
It's moving. It's inside the complex.
I don't see anything.
Vasquez's tracker remained silent.
You're just reading me.
Hudson's voice cracked slightly.
No. No, it ain't you. They're inside. Inside the perimeter. They're in here.
Stay cool, Hudson. Ripley tried to see to the far end of the corridor.
Vasquez, you ought to be able to confirm.
The smart gun operator swung her tracker and her rifle in a wide arc. The last place she pointed both of them was directly behind her. The portable sensor let out a sharp beep.
Hudson may be right.
Ripley and Hicks exchanged a glance. At least they wouldn't have to stand around anymore waiting for something to happen.
It's game time, the corporal said tightly.
Ripley called to the pair of troopers.
Get back here, both of you. Fall back to operations.
Hudson and Vasquez started to backtrack. The Comtech's eyes nervously watched the dark tunnel they were abandoning. The tracker said one thing, his eyes another. Something was wrong.
This signal's weird. Must be some interference or something. Maybe power arcing unevenly somewhere. There's movement all over the place, but I don't see a thing. Just get back here.
Ripley felt the sweat starting on her forehead. Under her arms, cold like the pit of her stomach. Hudson turned and broke into a run, reaching the door a moment before Vasquez. Together, they pulled it closed and locked the seal tight. Once inside, they began sharing out the remnants of their pitifully small armory. Flamethrowers, grenades, and lastly, a fair distribution of the loaded pulse rifle magazines. Hudson's tracker continued to beep regularly, rising in a gradual crescendo.
Movement!
He looked around wildly, saw only the silhouettes of his companions in the shadowed room.
Signal's clean! Can't be an error!
Picking up the scanner, he panned the business end around the room.
I've got full range of movement at 20 meters,
Ripley whispered to Vasquez.
Seal the door. If I seal the door, how do we get to the dropship?
Same way Bishop did, unless you want to try to walk out.
17 meters,
Hudson muttered. Vasquez picked up her hand welder and moved to the door.
Hicks handed one of the flamethrowers to Ripley and began priming the other for himself.
Let's get these things lit.
A moment later, his sprang to life, a small, steady blue flame hissing from the weapon's muzzle like an oversized lighter. Ripley's flared brilliantly as she nudged the button marked Ignite, which was set in the side of the hand grip. Sparks showered around Vasquez as she began welding the door to the floor, ceiling, and walls. Hudson's tracker was going like mad now, though still not as fast as Ripley's heart.
They learned, she said, unable to stand silence.
Call it instinct, or intelligence, or group analysis, but they learned. They cut the power, and they've avoided the guns.
They must have found another way into the complex, something we missed.
We didn't miss anything, Hicks growled.
15 meters, Hudson took a step away from the door.
I don't know how they did it. An acid hole in a duct. Something under the floors that was supposed to be sealed but wasn't. Something the colonists added or modified and didn't bother to insert into the official schematics. We don't know how up-to-date those plans are or when they were last revised to include all structural additions. I don't know, but there has to be something.
She picked up Vasquez's tracker and aimed it at the same direction as Hudson's.
12 meters, the comtech informed them. Man, this is one big signal. 10 meters.
They're right on us. Ripley stared at the door.
Vasquez, how are you coming?
The smart gun operator didn't reply. Molten droplets singed her skin and landed smoking on her suit. She gritted her teeth and tried to hurry the welder along with some choice imprecations.
9 meters. 8.
Hudson announced the last number on a rising inflection and looked around wildly.
Can't be.
Ripley was insistent despite the fact that the tracker she was holding offered the same impossible readout.
That's inside the room. It's right. It's right.
He turned his instrument sideways so she could see the tiny screen and its accompanying telltales.
Look!
Ripley fiddled with her own tracker, rolling the fine-tuning controls as Hicks crossed to Hudson's position in a single stride.
Well, you're not reading it right. I'm not!
The comtech's voice bordered on hysteria.
I know these little babies, and they don't lie, man. They're too simple to screw up.
He was staring bug-eyed at the flickering readouts.
6 meters. 5. What the fuck?
His eyes met Ripley's, and the same realization hit them simultaneously. Both bent their heads back, and they angled the trackers in the same direction. The beeping from both instruments became a numbing buzz. Hicks climbed onto a file cabinet. Slinging his rifle over his shoulder and clutching the flamethrower tightly, he raised one of the acoustical ceiling panels and shone his flashlight inside. It illuminated a vision Dante could not have imagined in his wildest nightmares, nor Poe in the grasp of an uncontrollable delirium. Chapter 13. The service way between the suspended acoustical ceiling and the metal roof was full of aliens. More aliens than he could quickly count. They clung upside down to pipes and beams, crawling like bats towards his light, glistening metallically. They covered the service way as far back as his light could shine. He didn't need a motion tracker to sense movement behind him. As he snapped light and body around, the beam picked out an alien less than a meter away. It lunged at his face. Ducking wildly, the corporal felt claws capable of rending metal rake across the back of his armor. As he tumbled back into operations, the army of infiltrating creatures detached en masse from their grips and claw holds. The flimsy suspended ceiling exploded, raining debris and nightmare shapes into the room below. Newt screamed. Hudson opened fire, and Vasquez gave Hicks a hand up as she let go with her flamethrower. Rupley scooped up Newt and stumbled backward. Gorman was at her side in an instant, pumping away with his own rifle. No one had time to notice Burke as the company rep bolted for the only unblocked corridor, the one that connected operations to medical. Flamethrowers brightened the chaos as they incinerated one attacker after another. Sometimes the burning aliens would stumble into one another, screeching insanely and adding to the confusion and conflagration. They sounded much more like screams of anger than of pain. Acid poured from seared bodies, chewing gaping holes in the floor and adding to the danger. "Medical!" Ripley was backing up slowly, keeping Newt close to her. "Get to medical!" She turned and dashed for the connecting corridor. The walls blurred around her, but at least the ceiling overhead stayed intact. She was able to concentrate on the corridors ahead. She caught a glimpse of Burke just as the company rep cleared the heavy door into the lab area and slid it shut behind him. Ripley slammed into it and wrenched at the outside latch just as it clicked home on the other side. "Burke, open the door! Burke, open the door!" Newt tugged on Ripley's pants as she slipped behind her, pointing down the corridor. "Look!" An alien was striding up the passageway towards them. A big alien. A shaking Ripley raised her rifle, trying to recall in an instant everything Hicks had taught her about the powerful weapon. She aimed the barrel straight at the middle of the glistening skeletal chest and squeezed the trigger. Nothing happened. A hiss came from the advancing abomination. The outer jaws parted, slime spattering on the floor. "Calm, calm, don't lose it," Ripley told herself. She checked the safety. It was off. A glance revealed a full magazine. Newt clung desperately to her leg and began to wail. Ripley's hands were trembling so violently she nearly dropped the gun. It was almost on top of them when she remembered that the first high-powered round had to be injected into the breech manually. She did so, jerked convulsively on the trigger. The rifle went off in the thing's face, hurling it backward. She turned away and covered her face as best she could in what had by now become an instinctive defensive gesture. But the energy of the shell impacting on the alien's body at point-blank range had thrown it back with such force that the spraying acid missed them completely. The dampened recoil was still strong enough to send her off-balance body stumbling into the locked door. Her sight had been temporarily wiped by the nearness of the explosion, and she blinked furiously, trying to bring her eyes back into focus. Her ears rang with the concussion. In operations, Hicks looked up just in time to fire at a leaping outline, the force of the pulse shell hurling his assailant backward into a blazing cabinet. By this time, the combined efforts of the flamethrowers had activated the fire control system, and the overhead sprinkler jets deluged the room. Water cascaded around the corporal, drenched the other soldiers. Some of it penetrated the central colony computer, ruining it for future use. But at least it didn't pool up around their legs. By now, there were enough acid holes to drain it off. The fire siren wailed mindlessly, making it difficult for the combatants to hear each other and rendering any thought of unified tactics impossible. Hudson was screaming at the top of his lungs, his shrill tone audible over the siren's moan.
"Let's go! Let's go! Medical!"
Hicks yelled to him. He gestured frantically as he retreated towards the corridor.
"Come on!"
As the comtech turned towards him, the floor panels erupted under his feet. Clawed arms seized him, powerful triple fingers locking around his ankles and dragging him down. Another towering shape fell on him from behind, and he was gone in seconds, swallowed by the subfloor crawlway. Hicks let loose a rapid-fire burst in the direction of the cavity, hoping he got the comtech as well as his abductors, then turned and ran. Vasquez and Gorman were right behind him, the smart gun operator laying down a murderous arc of fire as she covered their retreat. Ripley was fumbling with the door handle when Newt pulled on her arm to attract attention. The girl pointed silently to where the bleeding, half-blown-away alien was trying to rise to advance on them again. Flinching away from the blast and glare, Ripley drilled it a second time. The pulse rifle's muzzle jerked ceilingward, and Newt covered her ears against the roar. This time, the nightmare stayed down. A voice sounded behind them.
"Hold your fire!"
Hicks and the others materialized out of the smoke and dust. They were grime-streaked and soaking wet. She stepped aside, gestured at the door. "Locked." It wasn't necessary to explain how. Hicks just nodded.
"Stand clear."
From his belt, he removed a cutting torch that was a miniature of the one Vasquez had used earlier to seal the first fire tunnel door and then the one leading into operations. It made short work of the lock. Inhuman shapes appeared at the far end of the corridor. Ripley wondered how they could track their prey so efficiently. They had no visible eyes or ears, no nostrils. Some unknown, special, alien sensing organ? Someday, maybe, some scientist would dissect one of the monstrosities and produce an answer. Someday, after she was long dead because she had no intention of being around when it was attempted. Vasquez passed her flamethrower to Gorman and unslung her rifle. From a pouch, she extracted several small, egg-shaped objects and dumped them into the underslung barrel of the M41A. Gorman's eyes widened as he watched her load the grenades.
"Hey, you can't use those in here!"
He backed away from her.
"Right. I'm in violation of close-quarter combat regulations 95 through 98. Put me on report."
She aimed the muzzle of the gun at the oncoming horde.
"Fire in the hole!"
She pumped up a round and let fly, turning her head slightly as she did so. The blast from the grenade staggered Ripley and almost knocked Vasquez off her feet. Ripley was sure that she could see the smart gun operator smiling as the light from the explosion illuminated her battle-streaked face. Hicks wavered, the blue-hot flame of his torch shooting wildly upward for a moment. Then he straightened and resumed cutting. The lock fell away from the door a moment later, clattering inside medical. He reholstered the torch, stood up, and kicked the door open. Molten droplets went flying. Hicks and his companions ignored them. They were used to dodging spraying acid. He turned just long enough to shout back at Vasquez,
"Thanks a lot! Now I can't hear at all!"
She affected a look of bewilderment that was as genuine and heartfelt as her gentle nature, cupping a hand to one ear.
"Say what?"
They stumbled into the ruined med lab. Vasquez was the last one through. She turned, slid the heavy door halfway closed behind her, and in rapid succession fired three grenades through the resultant gap. An instant before they went off, she shut the door the rest of the way and ran. The triple boom sounded like a giant gong going off. The heavy metal security door was bent inward off its track. Ripley had already crossed to the far side of the annex to try the door. This time she wasn't surprised to find it locked. She worked on it as Hicks used his torch to seal the bent door they'd just come through. In the main lab, Burke found himself backing across the dark floor. This time there would be no discussion of hypothetical iniquities, no polite give and take. He would be shot on sight. Maybe Hicks would hold off, and Gorman, but they would be unable to restrain Hudson or that crazy Vasquez woman. Gasping, he crossed to the door that led out into the main complex. If the aliens were wholly preoccupied with his former colleagues, he might have a chance, might pull it off in spite of everything that had gone so dreadfully wrong. He could slip back into the colony proper, away from the fight, and make a roundabout run for the landing field. Bishop was amenable to argument and reason, as any good synthetic ought to be. Maybe he could convince him that everyone else was dead. If he could manage that small semantic feat and disable the android's communicator so that the others couldn't contact him to dispute the assertion, they'd have no choice but to take off immediately. If the directive was delivered with enough force and with no one to counter it, Bishop should comply. His fingers reached for the door latch, froze without touching the metal.
The latch was already turning, seemingly by itself. Almost paralyzed with fear, he staggered backward as the door was slowly opened from the other side. The loud crack of a descending stinger was not heard by those in the annex. Vasquez's grenade party had cleared the corridor long enough for Hicks to get the door sealed. It assured them of a few secure minutes, a holding gesture and no more. Now the corporal backed away from the doorway and readied his rifle for the final confrontation as something whammed against the barrier from outside, dimpling it in the middle. A second crash made metal squeal as the door began to separate from its frame. Newt tugged insistently at Ripley's hand. Finally, the adult took notice, forcing her attention away from the failing door.
"Come on, this way!"
Newt was pulling Ripley towards the far wall.
"It won't work, Newt. I could barely fit in your hideaway. The others have armor on, and some of them are bigger. They won't be able to fit in there at all."
"Not that way," the girl said impatiently. "There's another."
Behind a desk, an air vent was a dark rectangle against the wall. Newt expertly unlatched the protective grill and swung it open. She bent to duck inside, but Ripley pulled her back. She glanced petulantly up at the adult.
"I know where I'm going." "I don't doubt that for a minute, Newt. You're just not going first, that's all."
"I've always gone first before."
"I wasn't here before, and you didn't have every alien on Asheron chasing you before."
She walked over to Gorman and swapped her rifle for his flamethrower before he could think to protest. Pausing just long enough to tousle Newt's hair affectionately, she dropped to her knees and pushed into the shaft. Darkness unknown confronted her. At the moment, it felt like a comforting old friend. She looked back past her shoulder.
"Get the others. You stay behind me."
Newt nodded vigorously and disappeared. She was back in seconds, diving into the duct to crowd close to Ripley as the older woman started forward. The girl was followed by Hicks, Gorman, and Vasquez. Between their armor and the big pulse rifles they were hauling, it was a tight squeeze for the soldiers, but everyone cleared the opening. Vasquez paused long enough to pull the grill shut behind them. If the tunnel narrowed down ahead or split off into smaller subducts, they'd be trapped. But Ripley wasn't worried. She had a great deal of confidence in Newt. At worst, they'd have time to exchange polite farewells before drawing straws or something similar to decide who got to deliver the final coup de grace. A glance showed that the girl was right behind her. Closer than that. Used to moving through the labyrinth of ducts at a much faster pace, Newt was all but crawling up Ripley's legs.
"Come on," the girl urged her repeatedly. "Crawl faster." "I'm doing the best I can. I'm not built for this, Newt. None of us are, and we don't have your experience. You're sure you know where we are?"
"Of course."
The girl's voice was tinged with gentle contempt, as though Ripley had just stated the most obvious thing in the world.
"And you know how to get to the landing field from here?"
"Sure. Keep going. A little farther on, and this turns into a bigger tunnel. Then we go left."
"A bigger duct?"
Hicks's voice reverberated from the metal walls as he spoke to Newt.
"Girl, when we get home, I'm going to buy you the biggest doll you ever saw, or whatever you want."
"Just a bed will be fine, Mr. Hicks."
Sure enough, another several minutes of rapid crawling brought them into the colony's main ventilation duct, right where Newt said it would be. It was spacious enough to allow them to rise from a crawl to a low crouch. Ripley's hands and knees screamed in relief, and their pace increased markedly. She kept banging her head on the low ceiling, but it was such a relief to be off all fours that she hardly noticed the occasional contact. Despite their increased speed, Newt kept up easily. Where the adults had to bend to clear the top of the duct, she was able to stand and run. Armor clattered and banged in the confined tunnel, but at this point it was agreed that speed was more important than silence. For all they knew, the aliens had poor hearing and located them by smell. They were coming up on an intersection where two main ducts crossed.
Ripley slowed to fire a preventative blast from the flamethrower, methodically searing both passageways.
Which direction?
Newt didn't have to think.
Go right here.
Ripley turned and started up the right-hand tunnel. The new duct was somewhat smaller than the colony main, but still larger than the one they'd used to flee medical. Behind her and Newt, Hicks was addressing his headset pickup as they scuttled along.
Bishop, this is Hicks. Do you read? Do you read, Bishop? Over.
Silence greeted his initial query, but eventually his persistence was rewarded by a static, distorted, but still recognizable voice.
Yes, I read you. Not very well. Well enough, Hicks told him. It'll get better the closer we come. We're on our way, taking a route through the colony ductwork. That's why the bad connection. How are things at your end?
Good and bad, the synthetic replied. Winds picked up a lot, but the dropship's on its way. Just reconfirmed drop and release with the Sulaco. Estimated time of arrival, 16 minutes plus. I've got my hands full trying to remote fly in this wind.
An electronic roar distorted the end of his sentence.
What was that?
Hicks fiddled with his headset controls.
Say again, Bishop. Wind?
No. The atmosphere processing station. Emergency venting system is approaching overload. It'll be close, Corporal Hicks. Don't stop for lunch.
In the darkness, the soldier grinned. Not all synthetics were programmed for a sense of humor, and not all those that were knew how to make use of it. Bishop was something else.
Don't worry. None of us are real hungry right now. We'll make it in time. Stand by out there. Over.
Preoccupied with his communication, he almost ran over Newt. The girl had halted in the duct. Looking beyond the girl, he saw that Ripley had stopped in front of her.
What is it? What's wrong?
I'm not sure.
Ripley's voice was ghostly in the darkness.
I could swear I saw... There!
At the extreme limit of her flashlight, Hicks made out a moving, obscene shape. Like a ferret, the alien had somehow managed to flatten its body just enough for it to fit inside the duct. There was additional movement visible beyond the invader.
Back! Go back!
Ripley yelled. Everyone tried to comply, jamming into each other in the confined tunnel. Behind them, the sound of a grating being torn apart echoed through the duct. The grating collapsed with a sharp spang, and a deadly silhouette flowed through the resultant opening. Vasquez unlimbered her flamethrower and bathed the tunnel behind them in fire. Everyone knew it was a temporary victory. They were trapped. Vasquez leaned to one side and stared upward.
Vertical shaft right here. Slick. No handholds.
Her tone was clipped, matter of fact.
Too smooth to try a chimney ascent.
Hicks broke out his cutting torch, snapped it alight, and began slicing through the wall of the duct. Molten metal spattered his armor as sparks filled the confined tunnel with lurid light. Vasquez's flamethrower roared again, then sputtered out.
Losing fuel!
From the other direction, the column of aliens continued to close on them, their advance slowed by their need to squeeze through the narrow walls. Hicks had 3/4 of an exit cut in the side of the tunnel when the portable torch flickered and went out. Cursing, he braced his back against the opposite wall of the duct and kicked hard. The metal bent. He kicked again, and it gave way. Without pausing to see what lay on the other side, he grabbed his rifle and dived through the opening to emerge into a narrow service way thick with pipes and exposed conduits. Ignoring the still hot edges of the cavity, he reached back inside to pull Newt to safety. Ripley followed, turned to aid Gorman. He hesitated at the opening long enough to see Vasquez's flamethrower run dry. The smart gun operator dumped it aside and drew her service revolver. There was movement above her as a grotesque shape dropped down the vertical overhead duct. As the alien landed in the tunnel, she rolled clear and let fly with the automatic pistol. The alien tumbled towards her as the small projectiles ripped into its skeletal body. Vasquez snapped her head to one side just in time to avoid the stinger. It buried itself into the metal wall next to her cheek. She kept firing, emptying the pistol into the thrashing form as she kicked at the powerful legs and quivering tail. A gush of acid finally cut through her armor to sear her thigh. She let out a soft moan of pain. Gorman froze in the tunnel. He glanced at Ripley.
"They're right behind me. Get going."
Their eyes met for as long as either of them dared spare. Then she turned and raced up the service way with Newt in tow. Hicks followed reluctantly, staring back at the opening he'd cut in the ventilation duct, hoping, knowing better. Gorman crawled towards the immobilized smart gun operator. When he reached her, he saw the smoke pouring from the hole in her armor, shut out the gruesome smell of scarred flesh. His fingers locked around her battle harness, and he started dragging her towards the opening. Too late. The first alien coming from the other direction had already reached and passed the hole Hicks had made. Gorman stopped pulling, leaned forward to look at Vasquez's leg. Where armor, harness, and flesh had been eaten away by the acid, bone gleamed whitely. Her eyes were glazed when she looked up at him. Her voice was a harsh whisper.
"You always were stupid, Gorman."
Her fingers seized his in a death grip, a special grip shared by a select few. Gorman returned it as best he was able. Then he handed her a pair of grenades and armed another couple for himself as the aliens closed in on them from both ends of the tunnel. He grinned and raised one of the humming explosives. She barely had enough strength to mimic the gesture.
"Cheers,"
he whispered. He couldn't tell if she was grinning back at him because he had closed his eyes, but he had a feeling she was. Something sharp and unyielding stroked his back. He didn't turn to see what it was.
"Cheers,"
he whispered feebly. He clicked one of his grenades against one of Vasquez's in the final toast. Behind them, the service way lit up like the sun as Ripley, Newt, and Hicks pounded along full tilt. They were a long way from the opening the corporal had cut in the wall of the duct, but the shock wave from the quadruple explosion was still powerful enough to rock the whole level. Newt kept her balance best and broke out in front of the two adults. It was all Ripley and Hicks could do to keep up with her.
"This way! This way!" she was shouting excitedly. "Come on! We're almost there!"
"Newt, wait!"
Ripley tried to lengthen her stride to catch up to the girl. The sound of her heart was loud in her ears, and her lungs screamed in protest with every step she took. The walls blurred around her. She was dimly aware of Hicks pounding along like a steam engine just behind her. Despite his armor, he probably could have outdistanced her, but he didn't try. Instead, he laid back so he could protect against an attack from behind. Ahead, the corridor forked. At the end of the left-hand fork, a narrow, angled ventilation chute led upward at a steep 45 degrees. Newt was standing at its base, gesturing frantically.
"Here! This is where we go up!"
Her body grateful for a respite, no matter how temporary, Ripley slowed to a halt as she examined the shaft. It was a steep climb, but not a long one. Dim light marked the end of the ascent. From above, she could hear the wind booming like air blowing across the lip of a bottle. Narrow climbing ribs dimpled the smooth sides of the shaft. She looked down to where the chute punched a hole in the floor and disappeared into unknown depths, lost in darkness. Nothing stirred down there. Nothing came climbing towards them. They were going to make it. She put her foot onto the first climbing rib and started up. Newt followed as Hicks emerged from the main corridor behind them. The girl turned to wave.
"Just up here, Mr. Hicks. It's not as far as it looks. I've done it lots of times.
Rusted out by seeping water, worn through by the corrosive elements contained in Asheron's undomesticated atmosphere, the rib collapsed beneath her feet. She slipped, managed to catch another rib with one hand. Ripley braced herself against the dangerously slick surface of the chute, turned, and reached back for her. As she did so, she dropped her flashlight, watched it go skittering and bumping down the opening until its comforting glow faded from sight. She strained until she was sure her arm was separating from her shoulder, her fingers groping for newts. No matter how far over she bent, they remained centimeters apart.
Ripley!
Newt's grip broke. As she went sliding down the chute, Hicks made a dive for her, laying himself out, flat and indifferent to the coming impact. He slammed into the floor next to the chute, and his fingers dug into the collar of the girl's oversized jacket, holding the material in a death grip. She slipped out of it. Her scream reverberated up the chute as she vanished, plummeting down into darkness. Hicks threw the empty jacket aside and stared at Ripley. Their eyes met for just a second before she released her own grasp and went sliding down the chute after Newt. As she slid, she pushed out with her feet, breaking her otherwise uncontrolled descent. Like the corridor above, the chute forked where it intersected the lower level. Her flashlight gleamed off on her right, and she shifted her weight so she would slide in that direction.
Newt! Newt!
A distant wail, plaintive and distorted by distance and intervening metal, floated back to her.
Mommy! Where are you?
Newt was barely audible. Had she taken the other chute? The shaft bottomed out in a horizontal service tunnel. Her undamaged flashlight lay on the floor, but there was no sign of the girl. As Ripley bent to recover the light, the cry reached her again, bouncing off the narrow walls.
Mommy!
Ripley started down the tunnel in what she hoped was the right direction. The wild slide down the chute had completely disoriented her. Newt's call came again. Fainter? Ripley couldn't tell. She turned a circle, panic growing inside her, her light illuminating only grime and dampness. Every projection contained grinning, slime-lubricated jaws. Every hollow was a gaping alien mouth. Then she remembered that she was still wearing her headset. And she remembered something else. Something the corporal had given her that she'd given away in turn.
Hicks, get down here! I need the locator for that bracelet you gave me.
She cupped her hands to her mouth and shouted down the service way,
Newt, stay wherever you are. We're coming.
The girl was in a low, grotto-like chamber where the other branch of the chute had dumped her. It was crisscrossed with pipes and plastic conduits and was flooded up to her waist. The only light came from above through a heavy grating. Maybe Ripley's voice had also, she thought. Using the network of pipes, she started to climb. A large, bulky object came sliding down the chute. Hicks wouldn't have found the description flattering, but Ripley was immensely relieved to see him, no matter how rumpled he looked. The mere presence of another human being in that Stygian, haunted tunnel was enough to push back the fear a little way. He landed on his feet, clutching his rifle in one hand, and unsnapped the emergency location unit from his battle harness.
I gave you that bracelet,
he said accusingly, even as he was switching the tracker on.
And I gave it to Newt. I figured she'd need it more than I would, and I was right. It's a good thing I did it, or we'd never find her in this. You can bawl me out later. Which way?
He checked the tracker's readout, turned, and started off down the tunnel. It led them into a section of service way where the power hadn't been cut. Emergency lights still brightened ceiling and walls. They switched off their lights. Water dripped somewhere nearby. The corporal's gaze rarely strayed from the tracker's screen. He turned left.
This way. We're getting close.
The locator led them to a large grate set in the floor and a voice from below.
Ripley! It's us, Newt. Here! I'm here! I'm down here!
Ripley knelt at the edge of the grating, then wrapped her fingers around the center bar and pulled. It didn't budge. A quick inspection revealed that it was welded into the floor instead of being latched for easy removal. Peering down, she could just make out Newt's tear-streaked face. The girl reached upward. Her small fingers wriggled between the closely set bars. Ripley gave them a reassuring squeeze.
Climb down off that pipe, honey. We're gonna have to cut through this grate. We'll have you out of there in a minute.
The girl obediently backed clear, chinnying down the pipe she'd ascended as Hicks fired up his hand torch. Ripley glanced significantly in its direction, then met his eyes as she lowered her voice.
How much fuel?
She was remembering how Vasquez's flamethrower had run out at a critical moment. He looked away.
Enough.
Bending, he began cutting through the first of the bars. From below, Newt could watch sparks shower blindingly as Hicks sliced through the hardened alloy. It was cold in the tunnel, and she was standing in the water again. She bit her lip and fought back tears. She did not see the glistening apparition rising silently from the water behind her. It would not have mattered if she had. There was nowhere to run to, no safe air duct to duck into. For a moment, the alien hovered over her, motionless, dwarfing her tiny form. Only when it moved again did she sense its presence and whirl. She barely had enough time to scream as the shadow engulfed her. Ripley heard the scream and the brief splashing below and went completely berserk. The grating had been half cut away. She and Hicks wrenched and kicked at it until a portion bent downward. Another kick sent the chunk of crumpled metal tumbling into the water. Heedless of the red-hot edges, Ripley lunged through the opening, her light clutched in one hand, its beam slashing over pipes and conduits.
Newt! Newt!
The surface of the dark water reflected the light back up at her. It was placid and still after having swallowed the section of grill. Of the girl, there was no sign. All that remained to show that she'd ever been there was Casey. As Ripley looked on helplessly, the doll head sank beneath the oily blackness. Hicks had to drag her bodily out of the opening. She struggled blindly, trying to rip free of his embrace.
No, no!
It took all his strength and greater mass to wrestle her away from the opening.
She's gone,
he said intensely.
There's nothing you or I or anybody else can do now. Let's go.
A glance showed something moving at the far end of the corridor that had led them to the grating. It might be nothing more than his eyes playing tricks on him. Eye tricks on Acheron could prove fatal. Ripley was sliding rapidly into hysteria, screaming and crying and flailing her arms and legs. He had to lift her clear of the floor to keep her from diving through the gap. A wild plunge into the water-filled darkness below was a short course to suicide.
No, no, she's still alive! We have to...
All right,
Hicks roared.
She's alive! I believe it! But we gotta get moving, now! You're not gonna be able to catch her that way.
He nodded at the hole in the floor.
She won't be waiting for you down there, but they will. Look!
He pointed, and she stopped struggling. There was an elevator at the far end of the tunnel.
If there's emergency power to the lights in this section, then maybe that's functioning too. Let's get out of here. Once we're up top, we can try to think this through where they can't sneak up on us.
He still had to half-drag her to the elevator and push her inside. The movement he'd detected at the far end of the tunnel coalesced into the advancing outline of an alien. Hicks practically broke the plastic as he jammed a thumb on the up button. The elevator's double doors began to close, not quite fast enough. The creature slammed one huge arm between them. As both humans looked on in horror, the automatic safety built into the elevator doors buzzed and began to part. The machine could not discriminate between human and alien. The drooling abomination lunged towards them, and Hicks blew it away, firing his pulse rifle at point-blank range. Too close. Acid sluiced between the closing doors to splash across his chest as he shielded Ripley with his armor. Fortunately, none of the acid struck the elevator cables. The elevator began to ascend, clawing its way towards the surface on lingering emergency power. Hicks tore at the quick-release catches on the harness as the powerful liquid ate through the composite fiber armor. His plight was enough to galvanize Ripley out of her panic. She clawed at his straps, trying to help as much as she could. Acid reached his chest and arm, and he yelled, shucking out of the combat armor like an insect shedding its old skin. The smoking plates fell to the floor, and the relentless acid began to eat through the metal underfoot. Acrid fumes filled the air inside the elevator, searing eyes and lungs. After what seemed like 1,000 years, the elevator ground to a halt. Acid ate through the floor and began to drip onto the cables and support wheels. The doors parted and they stumbled out. This time it was Ripley who had to support Hicks. Smoke continued to rise from his chest and he was doubled over in agony.
"Come on, you can make it. I thought you were a tough guy."
She inhaled deeply, coughed, and inhaled again. Hicks choked, gritted his teeth, and tried to grin. After the foulness of the tunnels and ductways, the less than idyllic air of Acheron smelled like perfume.
"Almost there."
Not far ahead of them, the sleek, streamlined shape of Dropship 2 was descending erratically towards the landing grid like a dark angel, sideslipping as it fought its way through the powerful wind gusts just above the surface. They could see Bishop, his back to them, standing in the lee of the transmitter tower as he struggled with the portable guidance terminal to bring the dropship in. It sat down hard and slid sideways, coming to a halt near the middle of the landing pad. Except for a bent landing strut, the inelegant touchdown appeared to have left it undamaged. She yelled. The synthetic turned to see the two of them stumbling out of a doorway in the colony building behind him. Putting the terminal down carefully, he ran to help, getting one powerful arm under Hicks and helping him towards the ship. As they ran, Ripley shouted to the android, her words barely audible over the gale.
"How much time?"
"Plenty."
Bishop looked pleased. He had reason to be.
26 minutes.
"We're not leaving."
She said this as they were staggering up the loading ramp into the warmth and safety of the ship. Bishop gaped at her.
"What? Why not?"
She studied him carefully, searching for the slightest suggestion of deception in his face and finding none. His question was perfectly understandable under the circumstances. She relaxed a little.
"Tell you in a minute. Let's get Hicks some medical and close this sucker up, and then I'll explain."
Chapter 14. Lightning crackled around the upper rim of the failing atmosphere processing station. Steam blasted from emergency vents. Columns of incandescent gas shot hundreds of meters into the sky as internal compensators struggled futilely to adjust temperature and pressure overloads that were already beyond correction. Bishop was careful not to drift too close to the station as he guided the dropship towards the upper-level landing platform. As they approached, they passed over the ruined armored personnel carrier, a shattered, motionless hulk outside the station entryway. The APC had finally stopped smoking. Ripley stared as it slipped past beneath them, a monument to overconfidence and a misplaced faith in the ability of modern technology to conquer any obstacle. Soon, it would evaporate along with the station and the rest of Hadley Colony. About a third of the way up the side of the enormous cone that formed the processing station, a narrow landing platform jutted out into the wind. It was designed to accommodate loading skimmers and small atmospheric craft, not something the size of a dropship. Somehow, Bishop managed to maneuver them in close. The platform groaned under the shuttle's weight. A supporting beam bent dangerously, but held. Ripley finished winding metal tape around the bulky project that had occupied her hands and mind for the past several minutes. She tossed the half-empty tape roll aside and inspected her handiwork. It wasn't a neat job, and it probably violated 20 separate military safety regulations, but she didn't give a damn. She wasn't going on parade, and there was no one around to tell her it was dangerous and impossible. What she'd done while Bishop was bringing them in close to the station was to secure Hicks's pulse rifle to the side of a flamethrower. The result was a massive, clumsy Siamese weapons package with tremendous and varied firepower. It might even be enough to get her back to the ship alive, if she could carry it. She turned back to the dropship's armory and began loading a satchel and her pockets with anything that might kill aliens. Grenades, fully charged pulse rifle magazines, shrapnel clips, and more. Having programmed the dropship for automatic liftoff should the landing platform show signs of giving way, Bishop made his way aft from the pilot's compartment to help Hicks treat his injuries. The corporal lay sprawled across several flight seats, the contents of a field medical kit strewn around him. Working together, he and Ripley had managed to staunch the bleeding. With the aid of medication, his body would heal. The dissolved flesh was already beginning to repair itself. But in order to reduce the pain to a tolerable level, he'd been forced to take several injections. The medication kept him halfway comfortable, but blurred his vision and slowed his reactions. The only support he could give to Ripley's mad plan was moral. Bishop tried to remonstrate.
"Ripley, this isn't a very efficacious idea. I understand how you feel."
"Do you?"
she snapped at him without looking up. "As a matter of fact, I do. It's part of my programming. It's not sensible to throw one life after another."
"She's alive."
Ripley found an empty pocket and filled it with grenades.
"They brought her here just like they brought all the others, and you know it."
"It seems the logical thing for them to do, yes. I admit there is no obvious reason for them to deviate from the pattern they have demonstrated thus far. That is not the point. The point is that even if she is here, it is unlikely that you can find her, rescue her, and fight your way back out in time. In 17 minutes, this place will be a cloud of vapor the size of Nebraska."
She ignored him, her fingers flying as she sealed the overstuffed satchel.
"Hicks, don't let him leave."
He blinked weakly at her, his face taut with pain. The medication was making his eyes water.
"We ain't going anywhere."
He nodded towards her feet.
"Can you carry that?"
She hefted her hybrid weapon.
"For as long as I have to."
Picking up the satchel, she slung it over one shoulder, then turned and strode to the crew door. She thumbed it open, waiting impatiently for it to cycle. Wind and the roar from the failing atmosphere processor rushed the gap. She stepped to the top of the loading ramp and paused for a last look back.
"See ya, Hicks."
He tried to sit up, failed, and settled for rolling onto his side. One hand held a wad of medicinal gauze tight against his face.
"Dwayne. It's Dwayne."
She walked back over to grab his hand.
"Ellen."
That was enough. Hicks nodded, leaned back, and looked satisfied. His voice was a pale shadow of the one she'd come to be familiar with.
Don't be long, Ellen.
She swallowed, then turned and exited, not looking back as the hatch closed behind her. The wind might have blown her off the platform had she not been so heavily equipped. Set in the station wall opposite the dropship were the doors of a large freight elevator. The controls responded instantly to her touch. Plenty of power here. Too much power. The elevator was empty. She entered and touched the contact switch opposite sea level. The bottom. The seventh level, she thought, as the elevator began to descend. It was slow going. The elevator had been designed to carry massive, sensitive loads, and it would take its time. She stood with her back pressed against the rear wall, watching bars of light descend. As the elevator descended into the bowels of the station, the heat grew intense. Steam roared everywhere. She had difficulty breathing. The slow pace of the descent allowed her time to remove her jacket and slip the battle harness she'd appropriated from the dropship's stores on directly over her undershirt. Sweat plastered her hair to her neck and forehead as she made a last check of the weaponry she'd brought with her. A bandolier of grenades fitted neatly across the front of the harness. She primed the flamethrower, made sure it was full. Same for the magazine locked into the underside of the rifle. This time she remembered to chamber the initial round to activate the load. Fingers nervously traced the place where marking flares bulged the thigh pockets of her jumpsuit pants. She fumbled with an unprimed grenade. It slipped between her fingers and fell to the floor, bouncing harmlessly. Trembling, she recovered it and slid it back into a pocket. Despite all of Hicks's detailed instructions, she was acutely aware that she didn't know anything about grenades and flares and such. Worst of all was the fact that for the first time since they'd landed on Acheron, she was alone. Completely and utterly alone. She didn't have much time to think about it because the elevator motors were slowing. The elevator hit bottom with a gentle bump. The safety cage enclosing the lift retracted. She raised the awkward double muzzle of rifle and flamethrower as the doors parted. An empty corridor lay before her. In addition to the illumination provided by the emergency lighting, faint reddish glows came from behind thick metal bulges. Steam hissed from broken pipes. Sparks flared from overloaded, damaged circuits. Couplings groaned while stressed machinery throbbed and whined. Somewhere in the distance, a massive mechanical arm or piston was going kerank, kerank. Her gaze darted left, then right. Her knuckles were white above the dual weapon she carried. She had no flexible battle visor to help her, though in the presence of so much excess heat, its infrared imaging sensors wouldn't have been of much use anyway. She stepped out into the corridor, into a scene designed by Piranesi, decorated by Dante. She was struck by the alien's presence as soon as she turned the first bend in the walkway. Epoxy-like material covered conduits and pipes, flowing smoothly up into the overhead walkways to blend machinery and resin together, creating a single chamber. She had Hicks's locator taped to the top of the flamethrower, and she looked at it as often as she dared. It was still functioning, still homing in on its single target. A voice echoed along the corridor, startling her. It was calm and efficient and artificial.
"Attention. Emergency. All personnel must evacuate immediately. You now have 14 minutes to reach minimum safe distance."
The locator continued to track, range and direction spelled out lucidly by its LED display. As she advanced, she blinked sweat out of her eyes. Steam swirled around her, making it difficult to see more than a short distance in any direction. Flashing emergency lights lit an intersecting passageway just ahead. Movement. She whirled, and the flamethrower belched napalm, incinerating an imaginary demon. Nothing there. Would the blast of heat from her weapon be noticed? No time to worry about maybes now. She resumed her march, trying not to shake as she concentrated on the locator's readouts. She entered the lower level. In the inner chambers now. The walls around her subsumed skeletal shapes, the bodies of the unfortunate colonists who had been brought here to serve as helpless hosts for embryonic aliens. Their resin-encrusted figures gleamed like insects frozen in amber. The locator's signal strengthened, leading her off to the left. She had to bend to clear a low overhang. At each turning point or intersection, she was careful to ignite a timed flare and place it on the floor behind her. It would be easy to get lost in the